There's a lot of negativity, a lot of freak out, but honestly, stay educated. When you stay informed and you can stay ahead of what these tools are going to do, then it's not so scary.
Hey, it's Zach here, and super quick before we dive into the show, if you haven't already, I want to make sure that you have subscribed to my free weekly Case of the Mondays newsletter, because it is where I share my best advice, strategies, and mindsets to help you design a creative career that you absolutely love showing up for every Monday morning. When you sign up, I'll even send you a bonus 5-day email course to help you clarify and prioritize the next small steps in your unique path to success. To sign up, just visit optimizeyourself.me/newsletter. All right, on to today's episode. My name is Zach Arnold, and I'm a former Hollywood film and television editor turned career strategist and the creator of Optimize Yourself, where I help artists, creatives, and storytellers just like you design the more balanced, more sustainable, and more fulfilling creative career that you deserve. In a nutshell, I'm Tim Ferriss meets Ted Lasso, minus the mustache, because I am obsessed with both learning everything I can about optimizing human potential while also inspiring you to realize yours. If you are ready to step outside your comfort zone, let's dive right in and unlock the optimized version of you. Hello, and welcome to the Optimize Yourself podcast, where I share honest and candid conversations with best-selling authors, world-class athletes, Hollywood legends, elite experts in a variety of fields, as well as everyday people that are achieving extraordinary things. It means the world to me that with all the podcast choices out there, you have chosen to invest your valuable time, energy, and attention with me. Now, before we get started, don't forget to visit optimizeyourself.me/podcast so you can subscribe, leave a review, and so you can also download your unique customized podcast playlist, where I'm going to send you the 5 best expert interviews from our archives to help you achieve your specific goals. So on that note, today I'm sharing something a little different with you. Last October, I was asked to moderate a panel for the Los Angeles Creative Pro User Group to discuss the impact of artificial intelligence specifically on assistant editors in the entertainment industry. Now, even if you're not an assistant editor, and even if you don't work in entertainment at all, the topics that we discussed can be universally applied to many other technical and creative crafts. We get into several different topics, such as the ethics of AI, the opportunities that are available for outsourcing portions of work, and how these opportunities can allow for more creativity and the expansion of technical jobs, as long as we set the right boundaries around our time and our expertise. The panelists in this conversation were television assistant editor Ashley McKinney, feature and TV assistant editor Scott Jacobs, and visual effects editor, assistant editor, as well as co-founder of Master the Workflow, Richard Sanchez. So without further ado, let's get to this panel. Very excited to talk about this topic tonight. Also, a little terrified. This is a very, very divisive topic that has certainly got very, very fiery opinions on all sides. And in order for us to cover all of the conversations that have to do with artificial intelligence would take us literally all night. There are ethical considerations, there are legal considerations, there are copyright considerations, there's talking about the economic impacts, there's the technological impacts. There's no way that we can cover everything. But the reason that this panel exists tonight is actually from a panel that I was a member of. I didn't moderate, but I was a member of a panel for EditFest talking about AI a couple of months ago. And it was specifically about the way that we look at it from the creative process of editorial. And I felt the need for, and many other people expressed the need for, well, what about the assistants? How do the assistants factor into all of this? And that was kind of the genesis of this. And Michael was kind enough to reach out and ask me to moderate after I had been a part of that panel for EditFest. So I want to do my best to cover the topic from the areas that are going to be the most interesting and relevant and necessary for the assistant editor. I'm going to do my best to stay out of my own way. Anybody that listens to me knows that I have a tendency to stand on a multitude of soapboxes. I have not brought any of them. I will not get into TED Talk mode, and I want to hear more from these three. But there is one thing that I want to start with, which is an opinion that I'm very, very strong. I very strongly believe in. And that is that the role of the assistant editor is absolutely vital to the creative process, both technical and creative. And thank you. And I think that what we've seen over the last 10 to 15 years is a lot of the erosion of the relationship between the editor and the assistant. And it's largely become a very technical job, very much about data management. And one of my hopes, I have no idea where AI takes us more than anybody else does. One of my hopes is that it does give us the opportunity to bring back the mentor-mentee relationship and brings creativity back to the assistant editor role. So that is one feeling that I'm very, very strong about, is the fact that we have to do whatever it takes to protect the job and the role of the assistant editor and their role in the creative process. Outside of that, I'm going to do my best to hear from what everybody else has to say here. And you'll notice if you saw in the name of tonight's panel, it was very, very intentional that this is called the future of the AEs in the face of AI. And there's a reason that AE is in quotes. And I want to start with Ashley, as a matter of fact, because this is something that she brought to my attention that I believe Scott also has some opinions about. But Ashley, you had brought to my attention the difference between the AE and the assistant editor. So before we even talk about AI, I want to talk about the term AE. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that using a term like AE really eliminates the creative part of our name. It removes the editor classification. It also I think the language is important. Language is very important to me. Words matter, and being able to say assistant editor really gives you the weight and the the correct way of explaining to somebody what you do and who you are, especially to a producer, who I feel like producers sometimes want to devalue the work that assistants do because they don't really know what we do. Like, really, I really don't think a lot of people sometimes know what we do. And that's part of the job, is stressing how important our relationship with our editors are, but also our relationship to the work and to the craft and to our creativity.
Scott, I believe you too have some thoughts about the term AE.
Yeah, but I actually agree with everything that Ashley just said, because it's, I never really try to say this publicly, but considering that I'm on a pretty big public forum right now, I'm just going to say it anyway, because it just needs to be said. When I was coming up in 2009, you never heard AE. All of a sudden, it started developing and sprouting more and more, but I always would hear it from my friends that were in unscripted. Mm-hmm. And I'm not here to put down unscripted television or programs by any sense of the imagination. I actually think it's harder than working in narrative. So don't kill me here. But to Ashley's point, I feel like it really developed in the unscripted world. And then as those assistants who wanted to transition from unscripted to narrative, they brought along what they knew. And that was the term AE. And I think as more and more people started coming from the unscripted world, it started catching on a little bit more. But again, to Ashley stated it perfectly how I feel about it. It's, we're not ADs like an assistant director. We are assistant editors, and that means something. That means something to me. You don't hear about it in the feature world, and now you do, unfortunately, and I've grown to just accept it. I've given up standing on my own soapbox about it. But it's always been, I'm sorry, I keep referring to Ashley, because she said it so eloquently, and I can't say it better. I just kind of feel it just came from the unscripted world, where producers treated editorial as a cog, more of a cog in the machine than in the narrative space. And it just kind of evolves from there, and it is what it is at this point, but it's nails on the chalkboard for me. AE is after.
Yes. Yeah. So, Richard, I know that you have a whole, slew of monikers, assistant editor only being one of them. But what are your thoughts on this? And is it okay to call you a VFX editor?
Please.
Okay. So I just, you never know. I just want to double check.
Yeah, and I mean, Ashley stated it really well, where words do matter. For me, it's never been a term that's bothered me. I think really what it has always come down to is if people have used it respectfully with me, because people have used it respectfully and people haven't used it respectfully. I mean, the fact of the matter is even the term assistant editor, we get lumped in at times with people who get coffee, which is not what we do. And so, I mean, to be totally honest, I think the term assistant editor can also be used with disdain, but I do find by and large, there is, to Ashley's point, there's a gravity to it. And so I think there's something to be said about calling it, you know. I'm not gonna bite off someone's head if they call me an AE. Now, if they treat me like an inferior, we're gonna have problems.
But not that anybody's ever treated in an inferior way in post-production, right? Ever. That never happens. I think that it was an important place to start the conversation because I literally thought it was a way to shorten it and have an abbreviation. And I had no idea that it had so much weight, and understanding the value of it and the way that you can be seen or devalued, there's no reason not to call you an assistant editor versus an AE. And you're right. It is. It's After Effects. That makes sense. So moving on to the next topic, I know that everybody here, this audience, is very much tool driven and tech driven, and we are going to get there, but I think we have to set the stage a little bit first. Rather than saying, what are all of the AI tools that we should be learning and what's the latest? I think that in and of itself is a huge topic. But I think one of the many divisive topics that I've seen about artificial intelligence is, should we even be learning it at all? And should we be allowing it into the industry? So before we talk about the tools and the tech and the strategies and the tactics, I want to talk a little bit more about the politics of it, because I know that right now, this is one of the two main talking points with the SAG-AFTRA strike. It was one of the main talking points for the WGA strike. So I'm actually going to go back and start with you, Richard, and then maybe come back in reverse order. And by the way, you guys can go off of each other at any time. You don't need my permission to talk at all. But if we're looking at this idea of whether or not we should even be allowing all of these tools in versus, no, we can't have AI a part of our workflows and we can't let this in, it's going to take our jobs. Like, how do you feel about this idea of, you know, AI is something we should or should not embrace? Because I know you have very strong feelings about this.
I mean, I think stopping AI in the cutting room is a losing battle. It's coming into the cutting room. 100%. I think much like we're seeing with the WGA and the SAG-AFTRA strikes, it becomes imperative that we put in place structures that can protect our work within that. The genie is not going back into the bottle. And so I think the biggest concerns we have are, I don't see large-scale job elimination, but I do see job erosion. And so just to answer succinctly, can we stop it? Absolutely not. Should we try to stop it? Absolutely not. Should we try to limit how it encroaches upon us? Absolutely. And we should be deliberate and thoughtful about that.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. But I'm going to defer to either Ashley or Scott to see what your thoughts are about whether or not AI belongs in the cutting room and the assistant editor bay. And if so, like, how are we going to approach this?
I think as long as it remains a tool, yes, it's important to learn new tools and always be learning and always be open and evolving, no matter what. Like, I'm working on a project right now that we're cutting in Resolve, and I've never done that before, and that's scary, but it is giving me new knowledge and new ways of doing things. So I think that is important. What I think we also need to be aware of is the idea of those around us, of what they think AI can do, and make sure that we are making or communicating correctly what it can do. Because there's an idea that AI could completely take our jobs, but that's not where the technology is right now. It's really not that close. When you really look at it, most of the time AI is just big language models spurting out, you know, random strings of text being run by people in Ethiopia, which is a whole other conversation around AI. But so we have to be mindful for those around us, because I've worked, unfortunately, in situations where I was devalued by producers, where I was only brought on for dailies and then kicked off the project for however many months it was until lock. And then they called me and were like, are you free to do turnovers for this project? And it's like, well, no, I had to go and find another job. And then they wanted me to basically replace myself, in a sense. And I just think that that mindset, that bottom line, you know, budget sheet is where AI is the most dangerous. It's what people think it can do versus what it can actually do. And that's where our role comes in of putting those guardrails down and really making sure we're communicating effectively what it can do.
So bringing it to you now, Scott, there's a buzzword or a report that's been going around, this thing that's called Movie Labs 2030. Anybody heard of this this initiative where the studios have gotten together and they're trying to figure out what? Oh, I think Michael Kamas might know something about this. He might have a Five Things video about it that I watched today to cheat and learn more. So talk to us a little bit more about this Movie Labs initiative and how we see that potentially affecting the world of the assistant editor.
Yeah. So I'm on the Emerging Technologies Committee through the Editors Guild. And it's essentially just a fancy way to say we're keeping an eye on AI and all the tools, how it's going to impact all of us. And that was the first place where I learned about Movie Labs. And I kind of kept it under my hat, and I actually applauded Michael on Facebook when he finally posted about it, because it needs to, everybody needs to understand what the studios are doing. Mm-hmm. And it is essentially, you know, I definitely encourage you all to watch Michael's video. I think it's like 20, 30 minutes long, integral to your education. Trust me. In summary, it's essentially the studios are streamlining the workflow and the pipeline for making content in a way that they'll be able to pump out significantly more content, potentially with less people. I think there's a lot of positives that can come out of it. I keep wavering back and forth about what AI can mean to all of us. And I really feel that there is a world in which, yes, absolutely cutting rooms can get smaller, right?
Yeah.
But there is a considerable chance that the cutting rooms will have to expand, because the amount of work that will potentially be placed onto the post-production crews will be pretty significant, to the point that where, you know, on a feature, you have a first and a second, maybe an apprentice if you're lucky, we will now need several seconds to help in mitigating the amount of content we're getting. Now, to that, if Avid does create an AI that can do script sync, I am all for it, because I'm totally fine.
Real script sync, though.
Yeah, they need to work around actually working with narrative structure
instead
of documentary. Once they pass that, that'll be great. However, it is a good job for apprentices. There's a lot of negativity, a lot of freak out, but honestly, stay educated. When you stay informed and you can stay ahead of what these tools are going to do, then it's not so scary. And it's not scary for me, especially learning about what everything can do. To Ashley and Richard's point, you know, it's learning and understanding it.
Yeah, the one thing that I'll add to that really, really quickly, where I'm going to second what you said, Ashley, about the idea that it's the bottom line on the spreadsheets where this is actually the scariest. And I think the conversation is going to really come down to efficiency versus effectiveness. All of my students are like, oh my God, here he goes again about efficiency versus effectiveness. They're two very, very different things. Bringing in more technology and advanced technology and AI is going to make cutting rooms more efficient. It doesn't mean they're going to be more effective. And my argument is that they're going to be vastly more ineffective, because if there is a shrinking of the workforce, which is very much yet to be seen, it means that there's less collaboration. It means that there's less human intelligence that's telling our stories. But to me, the thing that we need to pay attention to the most is not just the erosion of the bottom line. The other thing for me is the idea that, now I'll just ask a quick survey, raise your hand. How many of you are enjoying all the extra free time that you have because you no longer have to beat your clothes against a rock to wash them? Anybody? You're like, I've got a washer and dryer. I have so much free time in my life. You just filled it with more stuff. right? So the fear that I have is that if we have AI, oh, think of all the extra time we'll have to be creative. Yoink, we just took it out of your calendar. That to me is what we need to protect. We need to set boundaries around our creativity and the value that we bring in the collaborative process. TED Talk over, moving back on. The next thing that you brought up that I think is really important, and I want to hear this from all three of you, because you both had very different paths in the industry. You mentioned the idea of the apprentice editor or a second assistant editor, and this idea of the team actually expanding. I know one of the big fears is if there is a lot more automation and technology, what's the path to becoming an editor? So I know that the Guild has had some conversations about that. So whether it's from the Guild's perspective or just in general, there are fears about if the technology is doing so much of the work, what is my path to creatively becoming an editor?
Well, I think the path to becoming an editor is someone's own tenacity to become an editor. You know, you can't, if you want to get in that editor's chair, and believe me, I want it. I'm not going to go through my whole career path. I had a fork that I had, a fork in the road, and I had to choose a direction, and I did. And that meant being an assistant for a little longer, but I'm working on projects that I'm gratified by. But communicate with your editor. It doesn't matter how much AI is doing our job or what else we need to be doing. If you don't communicate with the people that you're working with that you want to be editing, then you're not going to get anywhere. Like, it doesn't matter what the workload is, how little or how much we have to do. You just got to communicate and make sure that people know what you want.
Mm-hmm.
That's my
perspective. I think that, important, but also I do think that there is some credence to that fear of losing that pathway, because I do see an erosion in what assistants have the workload just in general, just in the last 5 years. You know, you go on a TV show and they're like, we only have 23 VFX per episode, and then suddenly that becomes 200 VFX per episode, just because they paint outs are cheap and they can send them off to India and have it done. But that's still more work for us. And most of the time, those kinds of shows don't have a VFX team. So it falls on the assistant editor. And we're also doing paperwork that maybe we shouldn't be doing it in television. And sometimes features. Sometimes in features, I've been my own post supervisor and talking to vendors and all of that. But that erosion, I think, is something where we can stand up and stop it. We need to be more vocal. I think assistants definitely need to be more vocal. I mean, that's one of the big reasons why I wanted to run for the board for MPEG, because I just felt like sometimes assistants can get forgotten because we want to move into the editor chair. But while we're here, we need to make the position and the career, I think, sustainable for the next generation.
My sincerest apologies for the interruption, but if you're a creative professional who spends long hours at your workstation, not only is the following promo not an interruption, but listening has the potential to change your life. Because working with a topo mat underneath you at a height-adjustable workstation is a game changer. Let's learn a little bit more from Ergo Driven co-founder and CEO Kit Perkins, creator of the Topo Mat.
The Topo Mat is the first anti-fatigue mat designed specifically for standing desks. The real benefit of a standing desk is movement. We found bringing in this cushioned terrain under your feet, your brain just subconsciously engages and you wander around and you get that movement at the standing desk that you need without even having to think about it at all.
People will come to me at an event or a panel and they'll say, I got the Topo Mat because of you. Even when they had a mat, once they used this one, it was a total game changer.
We've just heard time and time again that with Topo, we've kind of hit the sweet spot, that it's the right premium quality materials and a right shape that people are actually getting benefit out of this stuff.
You spend more time here than anywhere if you do creative work the way that I do. So I would rather be driving around in a Ferrari than a Ford Pinto. And I feel like this is the Ferrari of the standing mat.
One of the things you don't realize is that at a standing desk, your main interface to the world, your body's main interface to the world, is the ground. If you're going to invest in anything at that Ferrari level, it should be what you're standing on.
Well, my goal is that for anybody that is a creative professional like myself that's stuck in front of a computer for inordinate amounts of time of their waking life, they're doing it standing on a topo mat. So you and I, my friend, one edit station at a time are going to change the world.
I like it. That's a utopian vision I can get on board with.
If you're a creative professional looking for a simple and affordable way to stay active, energetic, and focused while spending long hours at your height-adjustable workstation, I can't stress enough how important it is to have the right mat underneath you, which is why I continue to share the Topo Mat as my number one product recommendation. To learn more about the Topo Mat and purchase yours, visit optimizeyourself.me/topo. That's T-O-P-O.
Similar question for you, Richard, but for you, I guess it's maybe slightly different in that you've gone both the assistant editor path, but also the visual effects editor path. So how do you see AI both kind of changing that path, but also you're in a more specialized area where this is something I've talked about a lot on the podcast, is this idea of specialization versus generalization. And the more generalized our skill sets and our knowledge becomes, the more we can future-proof ourselves against the highly specialized nature of AI. But you're in a, not that a visual effects editor per se is specialized, but a lot of the tools, like for example, you can now click a button, boom, rotoscope, the mat is done, right? That's where it gets a little scarier as far as like full-on replacement. So talk a little bit about that in conjunction with this idea of how the path might change with all this new technology.
Well, you know, to be totally honest, like, you know, looking at both, you know, the general aspect of the job of editor versus the specificity of each editor, you know, each editor works in such a specific way. And I think that's why I'm not overly worried about how that's going to change the path of the assistant editor yet. It will eventually, but Ashley touched on it earlier in that these generative, you know, the ChatGPTs are based on pre-trained models that then replicate language that we've said before. I mean, GPT-3 was trained on, I think, 100 billion sources, and then GPT-3.5, which became ChatGPT, and now we do GPT-4, was trained on, I thought I read like 2 trillion.
1.7 trillion and parameters.
The problem is I have not met an editor who's willing to reiterate their process 1.7 trillion times to get a program to do what they need to do.
I still cut on Avid 2018, so.
You know, like I look at the current iterations we have of AI right now, I'm not overly worried because of the source data that's required to create this replication. Whereas with the standard assistant to editor relationship, you know, some of the more organized editors I've worked for have like a Google Doc where they'll say, here's a screen grab of my bins. These are how I want my groups laid out. And this is how I really like my screen, my scripts colored. These are my color conventions. Great, I can do that, you know. But you only have to show me one document. And if I have the document, I have my own unique human ability to ask an insightful question to say, your document does not cover the exact situation I'm running into. I think if I were you, you would want it this way, but let me just check with you first. And until an AI can do that, I'm not overly worried about how that relationship is going to come in. Like most of the examples I've seen thus far, they're really useful for digital asset management. But even with the most significant example, to Scott's point, when it starts stepping in with script sync, I think now we're starting to look at, now we have an entry point, the apprentice editor, which often gets stuck with script syncing. I think that is the first step we're going to look at the erosion starting. As far as visual effects editing goes, there is a world where I do see a tool that could use something that could, say, compare my cuts for me. Now, I also look at that and I think that'd be pretty cool if I could just take 2 sequences and go, just tell me what's changed, because, you know, I can do this all day and I'm human, I make mistakes, you know. And there's a lot of good that can come out of that. But now we're talking about a show that might have 4 VFX editors having 3. And that's a concern, you know. The relationship between the assistant editor and the editor was irreparably changed when we stepped away from the Moviola and the assistant editor was no longer in the room reconstituting trim bins. And we went into separate rooms. And some people have said that that was the beginning of the destruction of the relationship between the two. I mean, I wouldn't say it was the destruction, it was a change. We were in different rooms, but I think it then becomes incumbent on both of us, the assistant, to be proactive and like, hey, I finished all my work. Can I watch your work? You know, some editors are amenable to that, some editors aren't, and some editors are also preactive in their own way. This scene's really beating me down. Can you just take a look at it? You know, and I just think this all the more emphasizes the need for us to take a proactive stance in our respective jobs, the veterans giving the next generation their opportunity to step up, and the next generation, the hungry up-and-comers, to be vocal. I want to do what you're doing. Can I watch you, or can you show me what you did?
Yeah.
Can I just add
of course, one? Please.
Because something else that's important with what Ashley and Richard were saying, you know, first of all, I do want to say that I don't want apprentices to lose the opportunity to do ScriptSync if they, you know, it's a very powerful tool and it takes a lot of time, but it does allow apprentices to become extremely familiar with the footage, and that can be integral into the process. One thing that I think needs to happen, especially as we approach the negotiations coming up in, you know, July is when our contract ends, July 31st, is really considering staff minimums, something to the effect of what the WGA was able to impact on their contracts. I think we need to be able to as well. You know, so in your point, Richard, with the effects heavy film, say if there's 2,000 shots or more, 4 VFX editors are required for this project. You know, something to that effect. That's how we also can protect what will happen with AI and everything. And quite honestly, God, for artificial intelligence, I swear, it's some of the dumbest stuff. Like, I don't know if any of you have played with a generative fill with Photoshop. Sure, when they demoed it with very clean geometric shapes, it worked beautifully. You go ahead and you try to remove a camera, like remove this camera in front of my face if you took a photo, good luck with it regenerating my face. It does not work. So, yeah, in case in point, I was able to, you know, create a, you know, get a little mountain cap that looked like a volcano had blown out. Okay, fine. Yeah, it worked with that. But in complex photos, it's not there. It's cool. There's a lot of cool stuff with it, but I'm telling you, there's no reason to be afraid of it.
Yeah, it's more, you have to be afraid of the people. The people who think they understand what it is.
The ones who want to play God.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a similar, at least in my career, I used to work in reality, and we had to use pluralize. Sometimes.
Did you hear the groans?
Yeah. The best thing about Pluralize was it had the try really hard button, and I carry that on in my soul every day.
In my day, we had multi-group and heartburn.
But there was one instance where we had put a GoPro on the side of a boat to try and catch a crocodile eating a chicken, and they did not slate the GoPro, and this was before the GoPro had time code. So you hear in the production audio, BAC, should I slate this? And somebody in the background goes, no, that's what Pluralize is for. And I'm like, I don't want to swear, but there were swear words that night. So I think that's where my fear comes from, is just the people not really understanding our work, and then also how AI can play into that. And I do think that the 2030 white paper is a really good place to start, just to kind of see what they're thinking. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's their end goal.
It's not the end goal. And it's like the thing of it, too, is when I was at Marvel, the studios are going to be going about things in a sneaky way, because I was pulled into a meeting with myself and two other firsts. And we're sitting there, I think there was a representative from Avid and someone from Marvel IT, and they were showing us this new database of how, you know, because in the MCU, how everything kind of, well, it used to in a better way, integrated with itself. but, you know, it's, you know,
it's a universe.
Would take from other films and projects and so on and so forth. And so it was a task to go ahead and say, like, oh, you know what, we're using this scene from this movie in here. Can we get that? And if it was something that was offline, it would take 1 to 2 weeks between going through all the channels, getting the rights or whatever else needs to happen. But they're developed what I thought was a proprietary library of sorts. They're getting all of their films, all of their dailies, everything online in the cloud, so that when it came time, especially for the trailer editors within Marvel, because they have their own marketing team, or whatever else, you can search. Say you needed Doctor Strange's cape or whatever. Don't kill me, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. But it would then go ahead and pull up everything. And they were asking us questions about what we would need, what would be more beneficial, this and that. And then later, like a year and a half later, I ended up seeing that I had inadvertently contributed to Movie Labs 2030. And it's not a bad thing. I mean, I think it's great that they're trying to get the input so that at least the tools that they're going to make will be beneficial for us. But the studios are actively working toward this 2030. And again, like, seriously, guys, listen to Michael's post and just get familiar with it, because that is definitely happening. Maybe not everything that they want is going to happen in the way that they want it to, but it is progressing in that way.
Well, let's dig into this then, because we obviously want to talk about some of the shiny objects and some of the tools. And one of the classes of AI would be facial recognition or just image recognition. There's image recognition, there's image generation, there's large language models. I mean, we could go on for hours and hours about just the different types of AI, but this is one that would be image recognition. So one opinion could be, well, doesn't that make it so much easier? Now you don't have to spend days and days randomly going through bins finding footage. You can say Doctor Strange's cape, bing, there are your shots. So explain why that's potentially not a good thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, I mean, I think it...
Well, if we're leading into what the Movie Labs 2030 could be, for anybody that either isn't familiar with it or just kind of has looked at it on a, you know, a superficial level, what's the part of it that we should be concerned about?
Honestly, it's kind of what I said before, and it's going opposite of where Richard feels things are. I think it's going to expand the cutting rooms, because there's going to be so much more that's put on our plate, and more things will have to get done in a shorter period of time. So these tools will actually be beneficial in order for us to accomplish our jobs. And again, as long as we have the staff minimums in there to protect us, to not be abused and say, well, if you can do it this fast, and since we helped develop this, we know how long it's going to take you to do this, you can do it on your own. It's like, no, that's not how post-production works. So as long as the union, you know, is able to protect us from that happening, then we're on a good path. You know, we just have to be careful about it. It's not, I don't see it as a catastrophically bad thing. It's going to hurt more people in sound and unscripted sooner than it's going to hit those of us in the narrative space, because so much can be done with sound already. It's been demonstrated here with Premiere and Resolve. Avid doesn't do things as fluidly yet, but I know it's coming.
Reese feature.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, case in point, the new, there's a new function in 23.8 that will allow the integration of third parties to communicate with Avid. Like Pix is on the verge of coming out with things in a few years' time. Something that was kind of a pain in the butt to have to export out of Avid, then ingest into Pix and upload and everything. It will now be fully integrated within Avid. So, you know, there's good and bad.
So then it's, in a way, you're kind of looking at it as with the more tools and the faster things work, we just fall deeper and deeper down the hole of today's miracle becomes tomorrow's expectation. Well, this shouldn't take that long, right? That's one of my concerns as well. Like I talked about with that efficiency, we need to protect those boundaries.
Which is already happening now anyway.
Right. So, well, it's been happening for decades. This is something we've been dealing with, just the erosion of time to be creative. We've dealt with this for, you know, a multitude of years and decades. So that's nothing new, but this is going to, in my opinion, it's going to happen even faster than it has in the past, which is why we need to be so conscious of it now.
I have spent almost 10 years now raving about how much I love my Topomat, and I have finally discovered what I now consider the Topomat of desk chairs, the Core 360. The Core 360, spelled Q-O-R, is designed to keep me constantly moving while seated in an upright and balanced position. To learn more about how it works, let's hear from Core 360 founder, Dr. Turner Osler, about why he created the Core 360 active sitting chair.
When you sit badly for many hours a day, and that's really what the problem is. It's very hard to make yourself get up and do jumping jacks every half hour. But if you just swap to a chair that requires you to be muscularly engaged in order not to fall off, it's an easy bar to clear.
For the procrastinators out there who hear all of the statistics and know how bad sitting is and it's the new smoking and they're thinking, that's something I'll worry about in a few decades, you're going to feel the effects of having more energy at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock in the afternoon that day.
And that's the whole point. Your core muscles will be stronger. You'll have less back pain. All of this will make you more available for the rest of the pursuits of your life, your kids, your hobbies, your whatever.
For those of us who need to practically live in front of computers to do our best creative work, the Core 360 is going to level up your game. Keep your body moving and keep the creativity flowing. To learn more and purchase what I consider to be the Topomat of desk chairs, please go to optimizeyourself.me/core360. That's optimizeyourself.me/QOR360.
I think that probably the most common question that I get or the most common frustration that I've heard, and I want to get a sense from everybody out here, when it comes to AI, if we're willing to embrace it, it's where the hell do I start? There is so many different tools to learn and so many different companies. And how many of you just feel just frankly, like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be learning or how I'm supposed to be spending my time? Is there anybody that feels that way? Yeah, I'm seeing quite a few hands. I get this question all the time. So because you're the tool man, you're Mr. Master of the Workflow, which if anybody that doesn't already know about Master of the Workflow, that's to me, it's just standard operating procedure if you want to be a great assistant. But there's going to be a huge transformation in the way that assistants do their jobs. And I would guess that you've probably done some dabbling. So what should we be paying attention to if we want to start learning the right tools and not spinning our wheels?
Well, I mean, if I may offer one opportunity to share an AI tool that I think is really cool that could potentially expand work. So it's not all boo AI. There's this tool and all this to say, on the most fundamental level, where to start. For now, just have fun with it, because there's some tools that are pretty fun to just play with. And I was playing with a tool the other day, which is called Lalal, LALLAL.AI. And what it does is you upload a song, and it will separate the instrumentation from the vocals. And I did a couple of tests with it. One was a song which had just vocals and piano, and it did a pretty good job. Then I had another one that had accordion, and a lot of those tones were pretty close to the, you know, the vocal range, and you could really hear where it pulled out sound. But it's one of those things, you know, nowadays, in most cases, you need a song from a popular artist. You can reach out to the record company. Your music supervisor will do that. You'll get an instrumental version, and that's great. But let's say you're trying to pull a song from like the 60s and those stems don't exist anymore. You go, hey, if this AI can create an instrumental version of this song that I really want to use in this movie, does that create an opportunity for that rights holder to get paid? And so now there might be some cool things. I think it is important to be mindful of that. And that's the kind of stuff that I've been playing with, you know, the kind of things like you just kind of keep it in your back pocket. And I go, like, again, for me, like Scott mentioned, you know, it's going to affect music first. So it's kind of one of those things where as assistant editors, we are often doing temp music and temp sound effects, which already ventures into those waters where we're encroaching upon someone else's job. But I think it's something interesting to have in my back pocket to go, hey, we don't have to naysay, like, we want to use this song. Hey, there's this tool. And then I can get on the phone with the music editor and say, this is something you might want to check out, because there is one, it's a great way for you to just play with. It's just play with AI and start on your own level. And there are cool things that will open avenues that are not currently open.
Oh yeah. I mean, play around with ChatGPT, just ask it questions. One of my editors, used it to get just alternative music choices, asked for a good like a list of 10 songs that sounded like that. And whether or not it gave a correct answer, I don't know. But that's kind of where we are right now. I feel like I've been playing with the generative fill with Photoshop and also the magic, whatever they call it, in After Effects, where you can track something and trace the body and separate everything. I don't remember what it's called. Sorry. So yeah, there's definitely room to play. I think it's playing so that you as a individual, as a creative, as someone who's going to be employed, know the tools so that you can make sure that there are these guardrails that we're talking about, because a lot of this is communication, and a lot of it is, you know, what can be put into a contract with the guild and what can't and what is going to be regulated by the government. But, you know, that's not where we are right now. We don't have those. So it's kind of up to us to do that in this path.
And I would say that in playing around with some of the AI tools, probably something that I will never do just because of where I'm at in my career right now. But if you're earlier in your career and you don't know coding or like Python or something to that effect, I highly encourage you to start training yourself with that. I should probably do it and stop making up excuses like kids and family and whatever.
Those are very important.
Who needs work-life balance?
Yeah. but I had a second on Ant-Man who, you know, I mean, we're all nerds, but like he took it to a next level. And like he astounded me by what he was capable of doing with coding and Python. And it's way beyond anything I'll ever be able to do, but that will be a very integral part of the cutting room, I think. So if that's it, you know, back in the day when I started, it was like no After Effects, no Photoshop. Now, absolutely, if you can start learning how to code and get that under your belt, like, I mean, Richard would be able to answer to that more with like his filing process and everything, but very important.
If I may, actually, that's a really good point. With ChatGPT, I threw FileMaker at you pretty fast and hard earlier. But actually, that's a great example of an area where you can play with AI. Is if you ask ChatGPT to write you a FileMaker script in FileMaker syntax, it will actually do it. And it's actually a really great way if you say, I want to learn FileMaker scripting, but I don't know where to start. I have found that on average, it tends to be correct about 80% of the time. So you need to know a little bit about how to fix it. But what's also really cool is if you are experienced with FileMaker scripting, it might lead you down a path of using tools that you don't traditionally learn. So in many ways, it can kind of open you up to different ways of working. And to Scott's point about Python, I've been slowly learning Python, and it's really interesting because same deal is I'm in kind of in my infancy, but I'll kind of go on there every now and then and say, write me a Python script to do this. And I'll go, and you go, well, it didn't work, but actually, kind of see what it was doing, and I kind of see how I'm going to get there. So there's a lot of really cool things you can do with it to jumpstart your education in coding and that kind of syntax.
Well, and it's kind of like what we already do, right? We break things down into tiny little pieces, and we learn from those tiny little pieces, and then build up everything as we go. I mean, I think automation is great, and I've used ChatGPT to kind of help me with some of my keyboard macros. And just trying to get markers on subclips from groups in Avid. So there are benefits to kind of learning the stuff. I really think that we really have to be very strong and in one unified voice saying, this is what it can do, this is what it can't, and this is what I can do to help or assist that as a tool.
Yeah, and I guess Richard triggered a thought that I had that I wanted to bring up earlier when we were talking about, you know, the good and bad about AI and everything, is that, you know, the thing as well that I feel with AI and why I feel the cutting rooms will expand it is because right now you've got tools, even in Avid, I don't know when it was introduced, but when you're doing a change list or an EDL, you have the option now to have Avid automatically collapse the tracks for you. So When I saw that, I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. I would love that. I'll speed up the change list process so much. And even though I can already do it pretty fast, but I was like, you know, let's give it a shot. And what I feel is going to happen is that AI will go ahead and be able to do things. I don't, and obviously this change list thing, list tool is
obviously AI, it can do things.
Yes. I didn't finish my thought.
Sorry.
No, no, no. My wife would be like, stop talking. Land the plane. But it'll do things faster, but then we're still going to have to check it to make sure that it's right. Because AI is not as smart as we are. And I know it's a bold statement to make, but who are the people developing the AI? We are. Now, obviously, James Cameron might have a different feel on that. But at this point in time, we're developing it. But the fact of the matter is that I went ahead, I was excited with this changeless idea of auto-collapsing, and it didn't do it the right way. And so it could be dangerous. And then therefore it will front load quickly, but then the back end is where you're going to still catch up on all the time that's needed to be able to make sure that everything is right.
Yeah. And that's been my argument and the reason why I'm not really fearful about, because when all this first started is, oh, artificial intelligence is going to replace the assistant editor. And my very simple argument for that is, if it does script sync and it organizes bins and all these other things, do you think that I, as the editor, want to monitor all of these tools and make sure that they're working? I barely have enough time to cut dailies and deliver my cuts. I don't have time to monitor the technology. Somebody still needs to be monitoring and communicating with the technology. So that's why, again, we don't know if it's going to shrink the workforce, if it's going to transform it, but the outright replacement of an entire job role, I personally don't see that happening, but we're going to look at this in 5 years and say, oh my God, he had no idea what he was talking about because this is changing so fast. But what I want to focus on next, as a continuation of this conversation about tools, there's a couple of statistics that I heard recently that I thought were really, really interesting and apropos for this conversation. For anybody that hasn't listened to the Edit Fest panel that I did, I brought up this thing that's called the Gartner hype cycle. And with any new form of technology, there's this huge upswing of hype about how it's going to change the world and change everything. And then all of a sudden, it kind of crashes back down to earth. And if you go back to when the car first came out, there were 200 car companies that were making cars. And if you look at how many there are now, it's consolidated to, I don't know, with all the vertical integration, maybe 10. Right. And if you look at the dot-com boom, I believe it was either 98 or 99% of the dot-com companies that came out in the late 90s and early 2000s all went out of business. Right now, we're seeing the AI technology boom. So my feeling is that focusing on very specific tools, that can be a little bit iffy. You don't know if that tool is going to be around. But I think that the most important thing to do is focus on skill development. Because if you develop the skill, like if you learn storytelling and working in a timeline, you have to learn different buttons in Premiere versus Avid versus DaVinci. Final Cut X is a different conversation. But in general, you know, you understand the basics, but if you can tell a story and navigate a timeline, you're developing a skill. So I want to talk a little bit more about skills development with all of you. From my perspective, I think the most important skill that we need to learn to develop is prompt engineering, learning to communicate with the technology. So it doesn't matter what the tool is, we know how to communicate with it. So I'm curious what you believe, if you want to be an indispensable assistant editor and you want to future-proof yourself, what are the skills that we need to be learning so that we can then decide how to prioritize potential tools that allow us to develop those skills?
Anticipate. That's the biggest one for assistants, is just always kind of trying to be ahead of your editor, and your producer sometimes. Yeah, you never want to do things twice. You want to anticipate for something to go wrong. I think for me, that's the biggest one. And then communication.
Yeah, and to me, these are the human intelligence skills that we need to focus on, not the artificial intelligence skills. And I think that's absolutely vital as an assistant, being able to anticipate the needs of everybody around you when you have to serve a multitude of different bosses. So I think those are great. So what are some of the other human skills that we need to develop to future-proof ourselves against all this technology?
You know, I mean, kind of touching on that, I feel like adaptation is really the name of the game, you know, and with all of this automation and AI, not losing sight of the fundamentals. You know, I think what's going to happen with the hype cycle you were talking about is, I always feel like there's this fundamental battle between marketing and engineering. The marketing puts out the video, and the engineers are going, "Don't tell them that it doesn't do that." So what I think is going to end up happening is we're going to get these tools that are going to flood the cutting room, and some overanxious producer supervisor is going to be like, "We got to use this because it's going to save a bunch of time," and we're going to find that it's not ready for prime time. It's going to be late, and we're going to be we're going to have to think on the fly. And I think invariably, and it will get better in time, but, we'll also have to realize where the judgment call gets made to go, get that tool, get it out of here. We're doing it the old way. We have to do that. Now, next year, let's bring that thing back in. Is it any better? It is. Okay, cool. But I think, thinking on your feet and adaptation and just a really a strong familiarity with the fundamentals, which is why for anyone who's coming into the field fresh, do not start with AI. Don't learn the chainsaw before you've learned how to use an axe.
Mm. Oh, yeah. And learning the history of where editing kind of comes from. I mean, I was lucky to host a ACE intern last week, and I was kind of going over the history and the difference of where Avid kind of came from, and like the structure and everything, and explaining, well, a bin came from trash cans and that's what they held the film in. And like, that language is kind of built into this industry, and I don't think that part is going to go away. And I don't know how well any type of AI would be able to understand that. And having that foundation just lets you know where the software is thinking. And if you can kind of understand where the software is thinking, you kind of can wrestle it to do what you want it to do eventually.
I would say, on top of those comments, which were awesome, carry a pad of paper with you everywhere you go. Be ready to take notes no matter what the conversation might be, because you never know when something's going to come up. Leave your home drama at the door. Don't bring that into the cutting room. Just try to stay focused. I know it's hard to do sometimes. Things happen. Keep a smile on your face, because we're going to be stuck in the room together for 12 plus hours a day. And I want to know that I'm going to have fun hanging out with you more than my family.
But try not to just suppress and hide your emotions as someone who really focuses on the mental health side of it. That kind of attitude, just kind of keep a smile on your face. I just want to make sure that that is conveyed, because that is something that I think at least a lot of women are told to smile more and be expressive more. We're human. We're not always bright, shiny, happy people. We can say, hey, I'm having a bad day today. You're like, just leave me alone. If you have a request, like slip it under the door or something so that I don't bite your head off. But
well, I think that goes to the communication thing.
Yes. Yes.
Which is 100% true.
Yes.
I'm kind of getting little pokes here at this point, because anticipation and communication are my two biggest things. It's true. Because you need to know how other people are going to affect your day.
Oh, of course.
And what you can do to get ahead of that is best. I would say think like a computer when it comes to a tech problem. I can easily overthink a situation, and then it ends up just being like, oh, did you shut down Avid and then open it again? It's basic, but it's true. If there's a folder that's not importing, look for the slash in the folder name buried somewhere, like a sound effect, just try to think like a computer as much as possible when it comes to some of the tech problems that you might incorporate. But you can't get better than anticipation and communication.
Yeah, and we could easily have a 3, 4, and 5-part panel on all the things brought up in the last 3 minutes, for sure. But to wind it down, I guess the place that I want to end it, and then I at least want to take a few minutes to open it up to questions, is that I just want to remind everybody that the reason that we tell stories is it helps us understand human existence. Artificial intelligence does not understand human existence, and it's the collaborative process that allows us to tell the stories that we tell, and at least for the time being, artificial intelligence does not have empathy. So my feeling is, and it sounds like everybody in this panel agrees, and most people in this room at this point agree, that artificial intelligence is probably not going to replace the assistant or the editor or fill in the blank, but people using artificial intelligence are going to replace them. So my feeling is that, like Richard said, one of the most important qualities is being adaptable and being willing to learn new technologies. But I personally am more excited about this than scared. I know that there's a lot of fear around it, and there are very different conversations about the fear side of it. But as far as the technology, the workflows, I am very cautiously optimistic about how interesting this transition is going to be.
Thank you so much for investing both your time and energy listening to today's show. If you were inspired by this conversation, don't forget to subscribe in your podcast app of choice, and most importantly, leave a review, because that helps move the show to the top of iTunes and get our message out there to those who need it the most. Simply visit optimizeyourself.me/subscribe to never miss another episode. Lastly, stay safe, healthy, sane, and most importantly, be well. One last thing before I lose you. If you haven't already, I want to make sure that you've subscribed to my free weekly Case of the Mondays newsletter, because it is where I share my best advice, strategies, and mindsets to help you design a creative career that you absolutely love showing up for every Monday morning. When you sign up, I'm even going to send you a bonus 5-day email course to help you clarify and prioritize the next small steps in your unique path to success. To sign up, just visit optimizeyourself.me/newsletter, and I will see you in your inbox.